Guess what, listeners? We're halfway through Masturbation May, and there is still plenty of time for you to pop over to sexgetsreal.com/May to jump in on 5 very podcast-approved toys for your sexy masturbation pleasure for all body types and genitals. And of course, to help you celebrate, I'm throwing in a free bottle of Sliquid Sassy Gel Water-Based Lube, plus some other goodies for select listeners. So be sure to pop over. There's 2 weeks left to the sale. On to our episode. Hey everyone, this is Dawn Sarah with Sex Gets Real. And this week, I am going to be chatting with a very special guest and answering a few of your questions, in fact. So with me today is August McLaughlin from Girl Boner Radio. She's also the author of a new book called Embraceable, which we'll be talking about. So I want to welcome you to the show. Hi, August.
Hi, Dawn. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored. I'm such a fan of everything you do.
Oh, thank you. It's definitely mutual. I loved being on your show a couple of months ago, and the chat that we had was so juicy and real, and I love the content that you're putting out into the world.
That was a fun episode, and I get good feedback on it still.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so thanks.
Yay! I would love to just kind of start with, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know your show because you do some really awesome stuff, but Girl Boner Radio, which I adore, but I know that you have a pretty specific kind of vision and definition for what that means, and so I'd love if you could explain to our listeners, what does Girl Boner mean and kind of represent?
Sure. So Girl Boner was a term that was an inside joke for me for like decades. I joke that I've been contemplating Girl Boners since the fourth grade, which I really have. So in sex ed, growing up in Minnesota, you know, my experience, like so many others, was very limited. And it was one of those moments that's kind of imprinted. You know, you're growing up and certain things just really stay in your head.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in sex ed, and I'm a very curious person by nature. So I'm sitting there wondering about this sex talk. It's like the only sex talk I would really have in all of my life, you know, until adulthood. And we saw a slide, you know, they were doing the projection with the slides, mm-hmm. and there was a medical drawing of a man's penis when it was erect. And that shocked me. I'm like, I've never seen a penis before. What in the heck? Why is it sticking out? What do you do with it? Like, you know, all these thoughts are going through my head. And then it was relayed to us that, you know, men feel pleasure mm-hmm. oftentimes, that erections can be very pleasurable, blah, blah, blah. So then my mind jumped to, wait a minute. So there's like this cool surprise thing that guys get.
Uh-huh.
What are we going to get?
Yeah.
So I'm like sitting there in anticipation and waiting and waiting and waiting. We finally get to the women's section and we learned about cramps and tampons and bleeding and all these things.
Oh, God.
And I was a little crushed after that.
Yeah.
And throughout the rest of my education, I did not learn a single darn thing about women's pleasure mm-hmm. until I just found it myself, as so many of us learn that way.
Yeah.
So fast forward to when I was after high school, I had dealt with body image issues since I was about 5 years old, really struggled a lot. I had body dysmorphia. But I also, ironically, was really involved in theater, which led into modeling. I was modeling and started to develop a really severe eating disorder, mm-hmm. which I was diagnosed with when I was in Paris. And in order to heal, I had to embrace my sexuality. I had this big aha moment mm-hmm. sitting in a class where we talked about sex, like really talked about sex. And I'd had sex, but I never talked about it. And it was just all these thoughts came to my mind, like, and then I got really angry when I started to realize, wait a minute, why didn't I learn this? And what does this mean? And what does this mean in my life? And what does this mean in everyone else's lives? And mm-hmm. so it took me a while to get to the place where I knew what I wanted to do with that kind of knowledge and those epiphanies. But I eventually became a writer and was working as a health and sexuality writer, which I still do, when I just decided I need to do something with Girl Boner. And I started as a blog series. Mm-hmm. And a year in, I started getting offers to appear on other people's podcasts and radio shows, and one of those experiences led to starting my own. So for me, Girl Boner is obviously the personal journey, but it's also, it's not just about female sexual pleasure. It's not even just about sexual pleasure, but it's about embracing our full selves and absolutely seeing the pleasure power that we all have in all genders. You know, I want it to be very inclusive, because obviously lacking is not just talk about women's sexuality, but mm-hmm. but all kinds of sexuality.
Right. Wow. I love that story so much because the fact that they would show, I can't remember ever in any of my sex ed seeing an erect penis, but the fact that they would show an erect penis and admit that there was some pleasure related to it, but then not cover that at all for like vulvas and vaginas just speaks so much to so much of the information that's out there and so many of the myths that we have around our bodies and sexuality and boys' experiences versus girls' experiences. And I love that you got really angry because I think that's definitely a big part of so many of our journeys. Wait a minute. I got screwed, not in a good way. You know, I mean, I went through like my entire adolescence not knowing other than kind of like, super secretive little sneaks of masturbation that I would fit in, that my body could do this and it was okay.
Yes.
So yeah, that's really powerful. And I think what's so powerful about your story in particular is how your moment of kind of connecting the dots was when you were working through your relationship with your body and your eating disorder and realizing that the connection to your body includes your sexual experience, that it's all one system that kind of like feeds itself and nurtures itself and impacts, you know, every part of you. And I think that's another big place where we miss so much when it comes to sex is sex still tends to be in kind of this like box for so many of us. Instead of realizing like it's actually it's a part of our everyday lives. It's a part of the way we move through the world. So I love that you went into Girl Boner realizing this is kind of what I want to put out into the world.
Thank you. Yes, it's so interesting how we do compartmentalize. It's like we would never say, you should really not talk about digestion or don't think about brain health. Don't think about, you know, there's all these parts of us that mm-hmm. are all lumped together. There's a body mm-hmm. and there's a self and then there's sexuality.
Right.
Like this hush hush little thing. And it's just, and it's interesting to me. I don't know if this ever happens to you, but when I tell people what I do mm-hmm. and what my work is about, very often the response I get is, but you seem so nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's why I have the whole kind of quote unquote good girl theme. Mm-hmm. Not yeah. because I'm trying to, you know, ostracize anybody else, but just we're all good.
Right.
And that the term good and sex cannot mm-hmm. be in the same sentence unless it's in this dark kind of insidious way.
Right. Something that really impacted me over the past couple of months is I was in a trauma-informed workshop with Ducky Doolittle. And Ducky was talking about STIs. And when people ask questions about that in her workshop, and one of the things she says, and I can't remember word for word what it is, but she said that she tries to, in every single one of her workshops, say something along the lines of people with STIs are good, clean, honest, beautiful people. Because I think with so many parts of sex, we assume that having an STI or having an active sex life or knowing a lot about your body and being able to talk about it kind of is the opposite of what would be good and honest and clean. So I love that you play with that. I love that.
That gave me chills. That statement is so bold and important, and it's mm-hmm. so interesting how it gets lost. And I've heard it kind of in the context of sexual empowerment, sometimes you hear people trying to be their own advocate and say, hey, are you clean mm-hmm. before we have sex?
Yeah.
And they're trying, you know, they're trying. There's all these layers to sexual empowerment, and it's this whole journey. And certainly early on in my own journey, and I'm continually learning more, but you realize that, oh, wait, I'm saying, what am I saying by saying that, mm-hmm. that somebody's dirty?
Right.
Because, and again, if you have an illness or an infection anywhere else in your body, mm-hmm. it's not like people are like, oh, totally can't date you.
Right.
Totally can't hang out with you. I can't believe you sneezed. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a really, and obviously intimacy brings a lot more to those scenarios, mm-hmm. but I think we definitely need less stigma.
Yeah, I totally agree. Oh my gosh, the stuff you're doing is amazing. So I want to talk about your new book, which I have a copy of, but guiltily, I've not read it yet. And I'm so
totally
excited
bad.
To, but it's on my Kindle. But yeah, I'd love for you to tell everybody about Embraceable, how you came up with it and kind of what it was like to create it, what it's about, who it's for, and how you feel about it now that it's birthed.
Mm. Thank you, and thank you for your support. Embraceable is a collection of stories woven with empowering facts and memoirs. So initially, I thought that I was, my first idea with Girl Boner was I was going to do a blog and a book, but it just rapidly became so much more for me and kind of my own universe and everything that I do. And the book became one piece. And so my initial idea, I had this book proposal that was like, the book was like 1,000 pages long. It's like everything you ever wanted to know ever about women's sexuality. And so I realized, and it had stories woven within it. But my work has taught me that the stories we tell and our own stories are so powerful. And I'm sure this happens for you. I learned so much from other people's stories, and the stories that they share with us is such an honor to be part of that. And so I decided to, instead of, I knew I wanted to tell my own story of sexual empowerment. And I'd been approached from a couple of publishers and agents about doing like a memoir about an eating disorder. And I didn't really, not that I wouldn't write that, but it just didn't feel like my whole story. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like enough. I didn't think my own story was, not to say that any one story is not valid and valuable on its own, but it felt like it needed many perspectives. So I decided to take my own story as more of a lead-in. So I tell my own experience from sex ed and modeling and a big turning point I had when I collapsed in Paris, and then also how my eating disorder progressed into binge eating disorder, and also that epiphany where I realized, you know, that I hadn't been sexually empowered. And then I talk about kind of sex ed history, and the rest is stories from other women. Many have appeared on my show. Some I handpicked. Some reached out to me when they heard about. I wanted a very diverse subject matter, and from women of all walks of life and different ages. So there are stories from women in their 20s up to like 70. And there are stories about escaping a cult that affected a woman's sexuality.
Wow.
There's a story about a woman who is Christian and still is Christian, has managed to, you know, really be embraced in her own sexuality. There's a story about asexuality, which I think is really missing from a lot of conversations in sexuality. So there are common themes, but each one is very different and each has different unique stories to tell within them. And I think they really make people think about their own journeys. So I wove them together with, instead of making it really heavy in the research, I just put highlights from research in between. And then there's a resource section at the end. But so I really see it as kind of a group project that I hope will inspire a lot of conversations.
Yeah. I totally agree with you that I think stories are a really powerful way to talk about tough subjects. You know, and I think especially when it comes to places where we either feel really alone or there's a lot of shame or a lot of myths and misinformation, that I think stories are such a wonderful way to draw people in so that they want to get the information versus just presenting facts and figures and someone feeling like, well, I'm not in those facts and figures, so this doesn't have anything to do with me.
Yeah, there's something about, you know, the textbooks are really important and the clinical studies are really important. But when you're sitting, it's that feeling again of being in a classroom where someone's just like spouting out facts at you. It doesn't feel the same way as experiencing a bit, you know, somebody's life and their emotions that were involved, which is totally missing.
Yeah.
From, we talk about sexuality, which affects our emotions hugely, and our emotions fuel our sexuality in so many ways, but we just don't talk about that either. It's usually really technical and all that. So, and you know, it's heart-wrenching too to hear people's stories, because it's very rare to hear a story of sexual empowerment that doesn't have a lot of pain.
I totally agree.
But what's beautiful about that is that these are women who have learned to thrive. Some are early in their learning to thrive, and some are more established in it. And it's, that's all beautiful. Like, I think we shouldn't have shame around having shame either.
I agree. I think working with shame is so important when it comes to our sexuality and our bodies and our experiences and our stories. And, you know, it's really interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I had two sex educators from Canada on the show, Sarah and Brian, and they were talking about how even though they are sex educators and they teach classes on communication and how to have threesomes and, you know, they teach anal sex classes and they geek out about this stuff all the time, that even in their own relationship, when one of them has something to bring up with the other, shame comes up a lot, you know, and it's like, oh, how do I say this? What are, you know, what's he going to say or what is she going to say? And And I just think that it's so powerful to share that with people, you know, that even those of us who talk about sex all the time and go to conferences or take classes or are learning from peers and experts, that even for us in our own relationships, you know, we can have that, those icky feelings come up, but we also, I think, often have a couple of the tools that help us move through it a little bit easier, of just knowing like yucky feelings don't have to mean this is where the conversation stops. But talking about the scary stuff with my partner is really, really yucky and awful sometimes. But yeah, that's okay. That's normal.
Totally. That's inspiring to know that, because vulnerability is this big strength when we share it, especially, I think. Yeah. You know, when I hear of, some writer I really admire who struggled, you know, it's not like everything just happens. So I think that's a really important point. Like, I remember when my dog died a couple of years ago, it really affected my sex drive. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because I kind of coached myself through having all these wonderful resources who've all talked to me about, you know, we're always talking about not having shame or reasons why we shouldn't have shame or why there's nothing shameful about whatever it is that you're experiencing. So that was really empowering for me to actually, I would like go to conversations I'd had, even stuff that advice I've given, and say, I really need to take that.
Yeah.
So it's challenging.
It really is. It really is. And I totally agree with you. Sometimes, you know, I'll hear myself giving advice and think like, maybe I'm talking to myself right now.
Yeah, which is a great thing. You learn so much through teaching.
Yeah, I totally agree. So one of the other things that you recently just shared on Instagram that I totally loved is you were rocking these amazing gladiator sandals at an event that you went to. And it's because they were flats, because for I think at least the past year, you've been kind of doing a no high heels campaign. And I'd love to hear just a little bit about how that started and what that's been like for you.
Sure. So last year, you may recall, some of your listeners might recall that at Cannes Festival, the big film festival, some women were turned away for showing up in flats. Mm. And when I heard that news, I was, you know, pretty infuriated that they would be turned away for wearing safer, comfortable shoes. You know, people should be able to wear whatever they want, but to say you can't wear something that is safer really struck me. And my next thought was, oh my gosh, they were so brave to show up in flats.
Yeah.
And then I thought, wait a minute, like why does that sound so brave to me? Like, I've done all this work in my life to, it took me like, you know, a full decade of work to get past the eating disorder. And still, you know, then I had to still work through some of the body image stuff. I do all of that work. Mm-hmm. And yet, for me to show up somewhere in flats would be like this brave act.
Yeah.
So I immediately thought, well, this means it's something I need to explore, because that's really how I personally have grown, is by, you know, sharing the journey, sharing the struggles, and really looking into it. And so I decided, first I put it out on Facebook. I was like, because I didn't know if people would really be that interested. You know, should I do this as like a series? Is this something people want to hear about? Is it at all impressive to go a year without heels? That's what I committed to. And people seemed pretty jazzed about it. So I thought, you know what, this just feels right. So I started with the heel free hashtag, and very, very clearly did not want to, and still don't want to, shame anybody for wearing high heels. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to do was just see, like, could I, what would this be like for me? And now it's been close to a year. It'll be a year, I think June 1st. And it's been so empowering. There were times when I realized I was putting a lot of my confidence in kind of like lifting myself through these heels.
Yeah.
And it's not even like I'd wear them super often. I used to wear them a lot when I was modeling. But now that I work from home a lot, I notice that when I go into the studio for my show, though, I would wear like heeled boots. And I just felt like this is my power uniform.
Yeah.
So the first time I went into the studio wearing flats, I can't even tell you how weird I felt. I felt, it was really vulnerable.
Yeah.
Really vulnerable. And over time, it started to feel very strengthening to feel the ground beneath me and to not feel like I had to rely, because it was kind of a crutch, I realized. And sort of when I first started modeling, it actually, I had never had any sort of thoughts about my height whatsoever. I wasn't you know, insecure about it. I didn't think it was great. It was just part of me. Mm-hmm. But when I started modeling, somebody actually told me, a professional, that because I wasn't one of the quote unquote tall girls, I would have to be thinner, like to make a visual illusion that I was taller and skinnier, and that the clothes hang well on a hanger. Wow. So they want something long and lean. And so I think that that just sort of hung with me, and I started wearing heels all the time. Mm-hmm. Now I can't imagine putting my foot in a high heel. I still don't, you know, whatever people want to wear is great, but like, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. A little bit of support is good, you know, yeah. those kinds of things. But it was really funny because the event that I wore those shoes to, I was emceeing on the red carpet, and I emceed the award ceremony at the Artemis Women in Action Film Festival. So there were women who were being celebrated for being stunt women and amazing athletes. There was a pro basketball. So these women wow. were like Amazon women.
Yeah.
I'm up on stage, and there's like a woman who's 7 feet freaking tall wearing heels next to me.
Whoa.
And
I'm like,
but it was really observing that was like, wow, this is actually makes it kind of cooler.
Yeah.
Like that I could do this. And still, you know, I still had moments of like, how in the heck am I going to find shoes? Because you really have to challenge the mindset and where, how much of this just comes from society telling us mm-hmm. we have to believe this?
Yeah.
And how much of it is true? Because people kept saying to me, well, that's because you look so sexy in them. But it's like, who decided that?
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody decided that. So I've shared like the history on my blog and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I learned so much, and it was just, and actually I didn't even realize I'd had some tension in my body and a little bit of pain and stuff like that. Totally gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what I love so much about that is that you caught yourself saying, wow, that's so brave. And then got curious about that of like, well, why do I think that's brave? And then you started kind of catching some of those internalized stories. And I think that's such a powerful practice. Like, I know growing up, a lot of the messages that I heard was, at least I have a pretty face. You know, so it's like there's a compliment in that, but what it's saying is, well, because your body's not nice, at least your face is okay. But I had really internalized that, and I found myself for years looking at people in different types of bodies, specifically fat bodies, and kind of thinking the same thing. Well, at least she has a pretty face. And it took me a while to really start to catch myself like, but what am I saying with that? That the rest of her isn't acceptable? And how do I apply that to myself? And I think those moments when we catch ourselves realizing what an internalized story is about our value or the way that we look or what we're bringing to the table is amazing. And I think that we don't do that enough. So the fact that you actually questioned that thought and then started digging into it, I think is just is so exciting. Mm. You know, I think too often we don't catch ourselves when we're kind of saying those stories over and over again.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's really important. And it's kind of a muscle that you work. Mm-hmm. And because I had worked it, I had so many beliefs about my body earlier on that I challenged, I think it came to me a little bit quicker. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had a similar one with, I used to tell blonde jokes.
Mm.
I told them on the Jay Leno, I saw them on the Tonight Show. I got paid to say a really demeaning joke about blonde women. I mean, like, this was when I was working as an actress. So uh-huh. It was weird because now everyone around me, the community I'm in, is so wonderfully supportive and all about sex positivity and authenticity.
Yeah.
The acting world is not.
Yeah.
So it didn't even, and I remember there was a moment where one of my nieces, who's brunette and had a sister who had blonde hair,
mm-hmm.
she told me a blonde joke. And I told her one back. And I stopped myself and I thought, what am I doing? It's that, just like what you said, uh-huh. when you just, it's like ingrained in the fabric
yep.
of who you've been,
yep.
but it was put there by somebody, something, mm-hmm. and really examining those beliefs can go a long way. And it's amazing how much difference, and it doesn't need to be something that we, you know, publicly share with everyone.
Right.
Everyone's very different in how they express those things, but maybe it's simply questioning it and talking to a girlfriend about it or mm-hmm. journaling about it or mm-hmm. just really contemplating.
Yeah. I love that. I think that practice is really important because I think we cause ourselves a lot of distress and pain from the stories that we tell ourselves. And when we don't know the stories we tell ourselves, we suffer a lot without realizing where that suffering is coming from. So yeah. I think that's really powerful.
Yeah.
Totally
agree.
So would you like to jump into a few listener questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So I pulled a couple that have to do with like bodies and personal experience. And so this first one, I actually reached out to one of my networks just to get a little bit more information about the specifics. But I think that this question is going to lead us into a really interesting conversation about how we as a society value the way certain genitals look. So we got a question from Betsa Dark Underside, and the subject line is "Clear my dark side." So it says, "Hi, Dawn. I'm a 29-year-old happily married woman that loves the show. I've been wondering about bleaching my asshole, but I don't know if it's something safe since it's a sensitive part of the body. I see girls in porn have really nice looking butts, and someone told me that they get them bleached. So I want my husband to enjoy something like that. I'm really insecure when it comes to my body, and sometimes I need approval from my husband so that I can feel good about myself, and I think that this will help a bit. Thank you for any advice that you give and the open mind that you have." So I reached out to some of my sex educator and health-informed colleagues just to kind of find out if they had anything that they wanted me to pass along. And basically, from a health perspective, what they shared with me was that bleaching is, you know, it's kind of like an acid peel, and you're doing that on a very sensitive area of your body. And so there are potential problems and some side effects. The first is that oftentimes it's something that you have to just keep doing over and over again because your skin is just going to repigment. But there are certain people who have extreme reactions to the bleaching where it either goes all the way white to the point where it's very discolored from your regular skin, or it can actually darken your skin depending on the way that your skin reacts to the bleach. And then there's dangers with burns, irritations, and scars. So I just wanted to kind of start with that because I think from a health perspective, it's important to know that if you're going to be doing something to a sensitive area of your body and it could potentially scar or burn or be discolored in a way that you weren't expecting, that's, I think, something just to know going in. I'd love to know if you have any just kind of like initial thoughts or if you have any experience with this, August, because I think that this kind of speaks to a larger discourse when it comes to the way so many people feel about their genitals based on what they're seeing in porn and in magazines. And of course, that then applies to the rest of our bodies. But I just kind of love to know, like, if you have any initial thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a great question. I think it's wonderful that she shared it because I do think it is something that so many people think about in all different ways, whether it's bleaching their asshole or if it's getting those jewels instead of pubic hair or, you know, there's all these treatments now to try to look a certain way or smell a certain way. And admittedly, it makes me a bit sad to hear her question because I do sense some pain. She said she struggles already with body image. So totally get that. And I have huge, huge compassion for her. And I think it's one of those things where it's very hard sometimes to figure out, is this something that she said she thought it would help? Is it sometimes we do something that, you know, maybe we, using the heel example, maybe we wear a comfortable heel because it does make us feel a little better, but we're not putting all our self-worth in that. You know, it's just like, it's not a big, big deal. Or are we going around in stilettos every day because we are trying to fill this void and make up for something and to compensate for some sort of deficiency that we might have? So I think it's really important always. The safety is hugely important to look into. But then also really looking into why you want to do this, you know, and because it's really important to know that every person's genitals are completely different. And there's so much beauty in our differences. I agree. I think it's really important to know that, you know, it, and it's very possible too, I would say even likely, that her partner is completely not even thinking, like, I wish she had a bleached asshole. Like, you know what I mean? It may be that, that her partner is so probably just turned on by her being happy and wanting to feel pleasure and all that stuff. So if it brought her a ton of pleasure and she could do it safely and it's not going to be this sort of like determining whether she's worthy or not.
Yeah.
And that might be something to test out, maybe a little bit at a time or something. Mm-hmm. But I would really have that conversation, because it does sound like a piece of that has to do with her partner.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if maybe they've had a conversation about it yet.
Yeah. I think I love what you're bringing up about there's a difference about doing something to our body or presenting our bodies in a certain way because we feel like it's an empowering act. Like, doing this makes me feel more myself. And I think that when you come at it from that perspective, not doing it doesn't make you feel less valuable. It's just a different feeling. And so I think that that's a really important thing. You know, like, I really love doing like full makeup with false eyelashes when I go to do my videos or when I'm going out for a special night, but not having that on doesn't make me feel like I'm less lovable or less beautiful. It's just a different way of expressing myself that I enjoy doing from time to time. And so I think what you're saying is so important. Like, is she interested in doing this bleaching treatment because she feels like it's going to make her more desirable, more worthy of attention from her husband, somehow make her better than she is, which would imply there's something wrong with her or broken right now? Or is it just something to do because you saw it in porn and it looked kind of cool and you think it might be fun to try? Those have very different feelings to them. And kind of what I'm getting from the email is there's some insecurity and some pain. So it's coming from a place of, I want to do this because I don't feel like I'm good enough, versus, well, I heard Margaret Cho talk about bleaching her asshole and it was really funny. So now I want to try it because I think that it just might be something fun to try. You know, that feels very different to me. The motivations, I think, are very different. And, you know, we've talked on past episodes of the show, like, they're having this really huge influx of women specifically, or folks with vulvas in Australia, who want to cosmetically alter their labia to be small and tight like they see in porn, instead of if perhaps they have more like flowy or asymmetrical labia. And, you know, I think that's another, it's kind of the exact same equation of, why are you choosing this for yourself? And are you basing your self-worth on how your labia happen to look? And, you know, I think that it's so important for us to realize exactly what you said of, like, all of our bodies look different. And I think the only reason that we see the same body types over and over again when it comes to porn is because they're specifically choosing those people. It's not because they just had a random 100 people come in with 100 different genitals. They're specifically casting because that's a form of entertainment and they have a very specific aesthetic that they're trying to fulfill, that they're choosing people that look a certain way. And that makes us feel like, well, everybody must look that way and I'm the one that's different.
Exactly, which is like the fashion industry, same mm-hmm. type of a deal. And I think that's such a good point, because there's other genres and types of porn as well.
Yeah.
You know, it might be really empowering or interesting for her to check out some feminist porn and mm-hmm. to see different body types, you know,
yeah.
and to see different, to see women with pubic hair and yep. to see, you know, I think that can be really empowering. And I love what you said about, you know, the difference between if it's, you know, somebody just suggested it versus if it's a deeper issue for you, because a lot of times we have layers of insecurity and other areas of our lives that are in turmoil or that we need to address. Mm-hmm. And instead we fixate on our body part. Mm-hmm. I know that for me, I've done that in the past. A lot of people, we get really insecure about a certain, maybe if I just, you know, lose a certain amount of pounds, for example, then I will be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe it's your job is not a happy situation right now. Maybe yeah. you're not in a happy relationship. Maybe, you know, there's mm-hmm. maybe you're not getting enough sleep. There's all these kinds of things. So I think always trying to weigh out all the different potential reasons and looking at your whole life too
mm-hmm.
and seeing if maybe sometimes there's something underneath it you don't even realize.
Yeah. I adore that advice, because I think you're so right that oftentimes when we're in pain and we try to change something about ourselves, we're not really addressing where the pain is coming from. We're just kind of trying to do something that feels like you have a little bit more control over it, You know, like I can lose 5 pounds and then maybe I'll be happier versus, well, maybe I have to have a series of really tough conversations that might change my living situation or might change, you know, the amount of money that I'm making. But to have that conversation could then have such a deeper, longer lasting impact on you. So I think you're so right. Like our motivations, our influences. So, you know, I'm all for people doing whatever they want to do with their bodies. So to Betsa, if you decide that bleaching your asshole is something that would be really fun or interesting or just a treat for your husband and you're doing it from a place of curiosity and playfulness, then I would encourage you to do it. Just make sure that there were some concerns with the types of facilities that offer that. There have been instances of hygiene issues. So just make sure if you're going to a salon that does it, that it's a really reputable one. And you know, it's not something that you have to keep up. You can do it once and see what you think. But if you feel like you're doing this because there's something wrong with your body because your asshole's darker than what you're seeing in porn, then I would invite you, like August said, to maybe watch some feminist porn or watch some queer porn, because I guarantee you, you're going to see some all different kinds of colored assholes when you watch that kind of porn.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, really good stuff. Yeah, I love that. Well, I have a question from a person with a penis, so I thought it might be fun for us to kind of like flip and talk about different body parts, but in a similar vein. So I got an email from someone named B. Lumberg, and it says, "Reason for concern. Dear Dawn, I enjoy your show very much, and I've been listening to as many shows as I can since I put it on Spotify. I've listened to at least 20 episodes by now. I'm a 26-year-old male living in the Pacific Northwest. I've been a student my whole life, and I'm in grad school now. I'm a virgin, and I've started to wonder if I should be concerned about the fact that I'm uncircumcised. Maybe that's a deal breaker for women. My concern is the response that women seem to have around the subject, specifically of cut versus uncut. And I apologize if that description is offensive. I'm in really great health, so there's no reason that it should be giving me cause for concern other than what do women think? I've noticed that there doesn't seem to be much discussion about it in mainstream media, and I don't really hear a lot about it on the internet in general, but I don't go and search for it either. So I was hoping to hear your thoughts on the matter." So what are your thoughts on circumcised versus uncircumcised penises?
That is such a great question. And it's actually one of the topics that's like at the top of my list to explore with experts, because I feel like it's one that I need to learn more about. Mm-hmm. But what first came to mind was I just recently had a conversation with a woman who had dated uncircumcised people with penises in Europe. Mm-hmm. And she said that that's a lot more common there. And she said, in her experience, it was a lot more sensual, that there was more sensitivity and complexity, and that she wishes that that was more of an option here. And I thought that was really fascinating because we don't talk about it much here.
Yeah.
It is just considered the norm to be, as this person said, cut. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to know that, first of all, that woman's very pro not circumcised. And I think that the person that you're with, they're going to accept you in all your wonder, and there's nothing wrong with you for not being circumcised.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have had, you know, a number of partners with penises over the years, and I want to say I actually had a really interesting percentage for a really long time where I was meeting a lot of men who were uncircumcised, and I had gone well into my early 30s with only ever encountering one uncircumcised penis. So I lost my virginity to a Greek boy who was uncircumcised. And so my very first encounter with a penis in like an intercourse situation was uncircumcised. And it didn't really like occur to me that maybe that was unusual. And then a couple of guys I dated were circumcised. And then, you know, like 15 years went by and I went back out into the hookup world. And yeah, I had this kind of like string of uncircumcised lovers. And for me, it's never been like a deciding factor. You know, I mean, what I was interested in was, is this person kind and open and easy to talk to? And do we have good chemistry? And do we kind of both want the same thing out of whatever it is that we happen to be doing? And then, you know, the circumcised or not circumcised had absolutely nothing to do with my decision about whether or not to sleep with this person or whether or not they were going to be a good lover. And I will say that I think there are some people out there who subscribe to the belief that uncircumcised penises are dirty or weird. You know, I won't say that those people aren't out there, because I think that what we see kind of presented as normal here in the U.S. is a circumcised penis, but I think that's changing. I think especially with younger folks, more and more parents are choosing not to circumcise. And so I think we're really starting to see a shift there. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that if you're connecting with someone, because to me it's the same. Like, if I was dating somebody with a vulva, like, I would not change my mind on wanting to have sex with someone if they had like small labia versus big labia, or if they had like certain colored pubic hair, you know?
Right.
Like, that's not what I'm basing my decision on. And if that is what I'm basing my decision on, then I'm just going to like kind of venture a guess and say that you're probably a jerk.
Yeah. And I actually think that could be a great gift, because it's a conversation that he could bring up. Mm-hmm. And because there's some discomfort, emotional discomfort about it. And you'll know very quickly if that's a person that is perhaps worthy of spending intimate time with you, which is a good thing.
Yeah, something that Dan Savage said a couple of months ago was, you should rush towards rejection so that you're not wasting time on someone that isn't going to accept you, because you're not going to ever get that time back and you could miss out on somebody super great. And so I think that would just be my advice to this person is, for me, whether or not you're circumcised is not a big deal. For other people, it may be, but those probably just aren't the people that you want to be getting naked with. And I think the best thing to do is to just say, here's my body and it's awesome and I'm a terrific person for all of these reasons. And if somebody doesn't want to be with you because you're not circumcised, then that's someone who doesn't deserve to enjoy you in an intimate way. But yeah, to me, it's just like not a thing. I'm curious now. Like, are there listeners who are like, it's totally a thing?
Yeah, it's really something. I feel like it's been coming up lately, maybe because, as you said, there's more freedom to, you know, go either way or whatever. But I feel like it's something that we all need to explore more. And the whole labiaplasty thing, I actually interviewed a gynecologist who said that he was having teenagers come in and once pretty frequently, a Beverly Hills gynecologist. Mm-hmm. And that just horrified me. I mean, they're still developing, you know, it's unfortunate. It's important to question those ideals.
I agree. I don't ever want someone to feel ashamed about a decision that they made about their body, but there's this part of me that just feels like I want to make sure that when you make a decision, that you're doing it from a place of, I really value myself and here's why this is important to me. Not, I'm doing this because I either feel pressured or somebody made fun of me and shamed me, which just means that they're a total jerk, or because I feel inadequate in some way. And yeah, I want us to all be having so many more conversations about like, all presentations of genitals are awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, period.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly. That's it. Like, if you get pleasure from your uncircumcised penis or your circumcised penis or your super amazing Georgia O'Keeffe labia or your super tiny little porn-like labia, like, I have smaller labia, you know, like, if you're getting pleasure from your body and there isn't any type of, like, illness or pain associated with it, then just rock it.
Yeah, such a gift. All of it's such a gift.
Yeah.
You know? So much wonder there. And totally our uniqueness makes us beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that, I have to imagine that there's people out there who, like, really love uncircumcised penises. You know?
I'm sure
that there are. So maybe B. Lumberg just, you know, needs to give himself a little bit more time, and then he'll find someone who's like an uncircumcised penis. Heck yes, let's get naked.
I've been waiting for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, I think we have time for one more question. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so this question is about orgasms. Alex writes, since I started having sex when I was 15, I haven't had many male partners, only a handful. But now that I'm older, I've discovered masturbating, and I know what I like. I'm currently dating a guy that I very much enjoy having sex with. He's different because he's sexually aggressive, which I really love. However, my issue is I cannot orgasm with penetration. I've gotten close when I've been on top, but there's just been nothing, and I told him I'm more of a clit girl. He attempted to rub my clit during sex, but stopped because I think he feels like he can't satisfy me, which is not the case at all. I wanted to see if you have suggestions on what I should do. Love the podcast, Alex. I love this question.
Me too. Absolutely. It sounds to me like, you know, first of all, it's so many people with vulvas do orgasm externally and and usually clitorally, and I think it's important to know, for her partner to know, that, you know, that pleasure is great, that it doesn't have to happen through intercourse. There's so many beautiful ways to have pleasure that have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I can have orgasms from intercourse, but the best orgasms and the more consistent orgasms are like fingers to clit, you know, and it, whether it's my fingers or my partner's fingers or even a toy, that is what's going to send me over the edge. And then if I'm getting dual stimulation, that's like super awesome too. But I have to tell you, if I was in the on top position, yeah, actually thinking about it now, like if I'm on the, in the on top position doing intercourse, I'm not going to orgasm from just doing that. Like, there would have to be a magic wand between our bodies, or I would do that for a little while just because it's fun, and then we'd change positions. But, well, one of the things I'll say is when we feel pressured to come, that's usually when we don't.
So true.
You know? Because you're just like, you're in your head, and you're thinking, and you're worrying, and you're wondering, and is this it, and is it coming? What can I do? And so you're tense, and you're thinking, and you're not like totally surrendered to the amazingness that your body is capable of. And so that's one thing I'll offer to Alex is you may at some point be in the right position or have the right amount of stimulation that you can orgasm from penetrative sex. But if you're worrying about it and wondering and having anxiety about it, it's definitely not going to happen.
Yes, that is so true. I love what Dr. Kamizarek, who runs, he's like one of the scientists in, who's a head honcho in like orgasm science, basically. Mm-hmm. And he talks a lot about experiencing orgasm instead of reaching it, which I love, because it's like, you may experience it, you may not. Yep. It's not like a finish line. It doesn't, if we approach sex as an experience and we see orgasm as an experience, I think there's so much magic there because we can be more present and relaxed. And I imagine too that Alex probably, because a lot of the tips that you see about if you want to come through intercourse, you know, woman on top is what they always suggest or often suggest, which is actually how I best come. And so I think that that advice sometimes can get plowed into our heads. And then we think, oh, that's the way I'm supposed to do it.
Right.
Whereas she may come through intercourse in all different kinds of positions. You know, you just never know. But I do think you're right that if she's able to relax and take the pressure off, then everyone's going to enjoy so much more no matter what happens.
Yeah. And I, you know, that, that advice is interesting because I think something that, that gets left out of that discussion a lot is if we're talking about what positions folks with vulvas more often experience orgasm from intercourse, I think what gets left out of that so much is the penis that you're having sex with can probably curve in lots of different directions. So I've had penises curve up toward a belly button or down towards their feet. And if they curve down and you're in the on top position, you're going to get a lot less G-spot stimulation than if, say, you're in doggy style. So I think that's just something else, is like inviting that playfulness and that curiosity around how do our bodies fit And what are all the different positions that we can do together? And what are the different feelings that I have in those positions? Because I think that'll help you zero in on, wow, I get way more pressure on my G-spot, or even maybe on your clit if you're like face down, legs together, and he's penetrating you from behind. But you have to be able to be in that place of like playful curiosity to find, how do our bodies make all these different wonderful things happen, instead of just kind of trying the handful of things that maybe you've read about or heard, because that might not work for however your body and your partner's body actually fit together. And then I think also, if you really want to experience orgasm when you're having intercourse with your partner, are you incorporating toys? You know, like, are you using a vibrator on your clit while he's penetrating you, or does he have a vibrating cock ring on? So I think those are all some things to experiment with and throw into the mix so that you get additional stimulation that I think sets you up for a lot more success.
Absolutely. I so agree. And I love the idea of experimenting and playing and just saying, you could even say, I'm going to not even think about orgasm for a while. Like, why don't we just have some experiences where all we're doing is just trying to purely just have fun and learn.
Yes.
And then, you know, if it happens, fine. But having it not be like the prize.
Yeah. And I love what was the doctor's name?
Dr. Komisarek?
Komisarek. Okay. Yeah. I love experiencing orgasm instead of reaching orgasm. Like, it's something that may happen, but it's not the end all be all. I think that's so important.
And the rest is at least as important.
Right. You
know? Embrace the whole experience, the journey.
Yes, completely. And there's one other thing in the email that I just kind of want to address, which was, he attempted to rub my clit during sex, but stopped. I think he feels like he can't satisfy me. To me, that says there needs to be a conversation, because there's a story being told. Like, Alex is telling, I'm not sure what pronouns Alex uses, so I'm just going to say Alex. But, you know, it sounds like Alex is telling themselves a story about their partner's experience. So I think he feels like he can't satisfy me. So unless that's actually been said, you know, this story seems to be causing you some distress and some pain. So instead, why don't you actually just talk to your partner about, you know, how do you feel touching my clit and having hand sex? Or how do you feel rubbing my clit while you're inside me? Or how do you feel if I rub my clit while you're inside me? And how would you feel if we incorporate toys? And just make it this like fun investigative process, instead of feeling like he's unsure or he's not enjoying it. And he may be confused, or he may not be entirely sure if you're enjoying it. So I think opening the door to be able to have the conversation and to be able to experiment together is going to make it so much easier for you to have a really enjoyable sexual experience, instead of like, oh, I can't tell if he likes this. It seems like he doesn't really feel like he's doing it for me. And like, that's also just going to not invite orgasm either.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And those conversations can be so awesome. They're great foreplay. They're great. I mean, whenever you have them.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to just start. And you can, you know, just hint at things. It doesn't need to be this, let's sit down and have this discussion.
Right.
You know, maybe it's just a question you pass along at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. You kind of whisper over when you're thinking of it, or maybe it's a text message or whatever. But yeah, I think that's really important and part of the playfulness.
Yeah. And I love that suggestion. It doesn't have to be the talk. We're going to have a discussion about the sex. You know, it can just be like, as you think of questions, ask them, or use them as a way, like you said, as foreplay or to flirt. Because trust me, if I get a text message from my partner that asks me a really yummy question about what kind of like pleasure I want, or how I want him to touch me the next time we see each other, that's going to get me really revved up. So that the next time we see each other, I'm thinking about it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So with you.
Yeah. So Alex, thank you so much for writing in. I'm really glad that you're enjoying having sex with this person. It sounds like his sexual aggression is something that you're really enjoying. And I would just invite one, not worrying about the orgasm and instead just trying to find ways to really enjoy what's happening. And then if the orgasm happens, terrific. And also just, you know, maybe try some toys or some new discussions and also find out how he's feeling about it so that you aren't feeling bad. If, you know, the orgasm just isn't happening for you right now, or if it takes a really long time, and who knows, maybe he likes if it takes a long time, because then he gets to tease you forever. Thank you so much for listening, Alex. I think we are at the end of our hour.
Aww.
I know.
Bittersweet. This was so fun.
It was so fun. I would really love for you to share with our listeners how they can find you, how they can stay in touch and kind of follow along with all the amazing stuff you're putting out into the world.
Thank you. The best place is probably my website, which is augustmclaughlin.com. And my last name's easy to spell. If you remember, laugh is in the middle. It's mclaughlin.com. And I'm everywhere if you Google Girl Boner as well.
Yeah. So I will have links to August's website and all of her social media on sexgetsreal.com. You can also go to sexgetsreal.com to get notes from this episode, to send an anonymous email, or to send an email with your name and email address if you want me to reply. And of course, also to get a link to our iTunes page, because having reviews from you would be super amazing. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. I will talk to you next week. This is Dawn Sarah with Sex Gets Real. Bye.